Blog Talk Radio.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times what it leaves. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 0.0005% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate. And that's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching never changed anything.
These were their last words.
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it. And said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it, just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, This here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know. He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the dough. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the dough? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings. All of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package gonna go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come. I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005. And my accountant had gotten in cahoots. And next thing you know, my accountant died. And a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, we have a problem. She she had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years, signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So
like,
you could just see
600,000,
600,000
deducted.
Yeah, you're looking at
deducted. So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here. Oh, man. He said, this woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. Mm-hmm. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was, my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, I said, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government, plus I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. Mm. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back.
By the time you met Blondon, how big were you getting? Like, how much were you buying on a regular basis?
Oh, no, maybe a couple pounds, 16 pounds maybe.
16 pounds.
Yeah, 8 pounds, something like that. Okay. At that time, pounds were going for 35,000 a pound, yeah.
By the time you met Blondon, how much cash did you have?
I don't know. I had a few hundred thousand.
A few hundred thousand. So you weren't a millionaire back then, but you were well off.
I was doing good.
You
yeah.
was doing good.
I was doing pretty good.
So how did the whole Blondon thing come together?
Well, see, we were still getting from the Blondon, but we wasn't going directly to Blondon.
It was a middleman.
It was a middleman. So the only thing happened when we met him personally was that the middleman had got cut out, which dropped the price even more. But we already.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out. He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry, because shortly after, he got the ball again, this time on the near side, for another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Friends, it is time once again for our daily message of hope. And with today's message, here is Richard Eaton.
Friends, to brighten your day,
Here is our message of hope.
A man who taught many wonderful truths about life once said, "Make the most of your present opportunities. Make the most of your present opportunities." Let me repeat once again. Make the most of your present opportunities. And the longer I live, the more convinced I am, this is a wonderful piece of advice. Appreciate the present before it becomes the past. Make the most of your present opportunities. So many of us waste our present time worrying about the past or the future. And actually, we can do nothing about either the past or the future. Little sympathy or patience should be wasted on the person who is eternally crying for the good old days or bemoaning that things aren't as they used to be. Naturally, they aren't. Time changes all things, as it is changing you right now. And were it not for change, there could be no progress in this world of ours. Probably a good bit of advice to all of us would be to live every moment as it comes to us, just as though it were the only one we had on earth. To appreciate the present before it becomes the past. Let your life be filled now with love, with happiness, with harmony, with courage, with faith. Too many of us are wasting energy trying to relive the past. And we are putting off our good from day to day, from month to month, and from year to year, so that we never quite catch up with it. Why not live now? Forget the troubles of the past and stop dreading the future. The expression of our powers and abilities is governed by our thoughts. If our thoughts are dwelling in the past or in the future, our power and abilities will be lessened in the present because they will be trying to follow our thoughts to realms that do not exist. We need all our abilities right now in the present moment. We cannot afford to dissipate them by letting our mind dwell on the past or by worrying about the future. If we live rightly every present moment, we shall have no occasion to mourn over the past. What does it really matter today, what happened yesterday or some other day in the past? It is beyond our recall. So it is not worth the effort of worrying about it. Dr. Frank Crane expressed a bit of good philosophy on this matter in his short article called The Past. Says Dr. Crane, "A good deal of morbid nonsense has been said and written and thought about the past. The past is irrevocable. We have been told in sermon and story. You cannot escape the past. The past can never be changed." And so on and so on. The whole trend of this thought being that the past is a kind of a Sherlock Holmes, dogging our steps forever, a sinister nemesis, waiting its chance to strike us down, the account book of an angry God, sure to confront us someday. All of this is morbid. Most of it is dramatic. The underlying sentiment of it is false and weakening and septic. As a matter of fact, our past, as Maeterlinck puts it so well, depends on our present and changes with it. Our past depends on our present and changes with it. What the past is depends upon the way you are now using it. Its effect upon your destiny will be gauged by how you translate it into the future. If we brood over the past and weaken ourselves with vain regret, with self-contempt and remorse, then that past will poison and undo us in the present. But no matter what the past contains of our sin or folly, we can, by a right use of it now, make it minister to our welfare. First of all, We can learn wisdom from the past. By it, we can realize our faults to be corrected and our offenses to be atoned for. And with this wisdom, we can go on to better things. The only true repentance is so to use the past as to enable us to build a better future. Reaping and wailing and brooding, those are luxuries of morbidity. The past is beneath our feet. We can go down into it and wallow in impotent grief, or we can step upon that past to higher things. The great enemy of life is despair. The great friend is hope. Despair paralyzes, ruins. Hope energizes, for we are saved by hope. Face the future. Whatever the past has been, let it nerve you to spend your remaining days in faithfulness and loyalty to your better self. These are the words of Dr. Frank Crane, and I feel he certainly has the right view. Be concerned about your past only to the extent that it can teach you. The mistakes and sorrows of yesterday belong to yesterday. Yesterday provided sufficient time in which to consider its woes. Most of the worries, the griefs, the heartaches that we suffer are nothing more or less than memory of the troubles and hurts that we experienced some time in the past. If we could only remember that sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Moffat renders this passage as a day's own trouble is quite enough for the day. And when you stop to think of it, isn't this true? We can readily understand from this that the miseries or woes of yesterday can enter today or tomorrow only through our memory. Before the end of yesterday, we should have put out of mind every disturbing thought caused by yesterday's situations. Those were yesterday's problems, so let them, along with yesterday, pass from sight and from memory. Let not the sun go down from your wrath is a mighty good bit of advice, or so it seems to me. We should not let the day close with our mind disturbed. It is too late to do anything about the way we let yesterday close. But we can do something about the way we let today close. Let us set today free in order that we may meet tomorrow, another new day, fresh and clean and unused, in the right spirit. Our wrath, mental disturbance, and physical miseries of yesterday have no place in our today. They only serve to crowd out the joys and blessings that are in store for us today. Each new day, a new world will begin for us if we do not carry into it the woes of yesterday. If we have not forgotten the woes of yesterday, we do not really experience a new day. To us, the day is just an extension of yesterday. When we let yesterday's sun go down, finding us wrathful and disturbed in mind, we are not obeying the biblical injunction to forget our miseries. We are not approaching a new day with a clear mind and a clean heart. The wisely given command to forget is a provision for our happiness. Were we to remember all our mistakes of the past, we should not have time to think of the good we want. Thou shalt forget thy misery. What shall we forget? What does the misery include? What comes under the category of wrath of mind? Everything not founded upon God or good and truth. It was meant that we should enjoy today to the exclusion of the wraths and miseries of yesterday. We are not to let one little rankling thought of yesterday sully the purity, beauty of today. You know, friends, the sleep that God gives us at night is but a form of his power to help us forget. Sleep is a vestibule through which we pass from one day to the next. We are to shed all our useless thoughts before we approach the next day. What of the wrongs that someone had committed against us yesterday or some other day? What of our jealousies and suspicions? What of the things we secretly accuse ourselves of? All these must go, We must forget them. They belong to the dream or nightmare of the past, in which we have awakened to a new day. Are you willing to obey the command, "Thou shalt forget thy miseries"? You alone can decide. You alone can reap the benefits of forgetting. You alone can decide whether you will spoil this new day, fresh and clean and unused, by harboring the adverse thoughts of yesterday. You alone can decide whether you will today remain in the wrathful state of mind of yesterday, or whether you will make the most of your present opportunities. The things of yesterday brought to your mind, which cause you to be disturbed, are quite insignificant today. Forget them. Learn to wipe from mind every thought that works against your highest good. Enjoy today to the fullest. You can do this only by approaching it with a clear mind, receptive to the good in store for you. Let each new day begin life anew for you, rather than being merely an extension of yesterday. Start out this morning by obeying the command to forget. Make up your mind you are not going to try to carry yesterday along into this brand new day. Erase from your mind any sense of blame, any memory of failure, all thoughts of wrongs of the past. Was it not Ruskin who said, "Let every dawn of morning be to you as the beginning of life, and every setting sun be to you as its close"? Then let every one of these short lives leave its sure record of some kindly thing done for others, some goodly strength or knowledge gained for yourself. Let me repeat, let every dawn of morning be to you as the beginning of life, and every setting sun be to you as its close. Then let every one of these short lives leave its sure record of some kindly thing done for others, some goodly strength or knowledge gained for yourselves. It behooves all of us to live in the present in the way that will make of our future that which we wish our present were now. Yes, friends, it's up to us. We can go down into and wallow in impotent grief, or we can step upon the past to higher things. It is up to us. And so, friends, you've been listening once again to our message of hope. God bless you, everyone.
Listen again tomorrow, friends, for another message of hope with Richard Easton. This is UBC, the United Broadcasting Company.
Okay, today we're doing, picking up from last week. I had some back trouble, so I couldn't concentrate. What was it, Friday? So I got a back brace on right now, so I can walk, I can bend over, more so than I could last Friday. Anyway, so today, homemade wealth and awareness. Now, what this live stream is about, we're still in January. The month is almost over, but not quite over. And I consider January a very important month because it's the first month of the year. You know, everything's, the year's fresh, brand new, clean slate. And people have their new, some people call them New Year's resolutions, goals, whatever you might call them. But I feel that in order to achieve whatever goal or resolutions that you have on your list, if you have a list at all, is your mind's got to be right. Your mind's got to be right. If you have the right mindset, you can accomplish seemingly impossible goals or challenges, as some people might want to call them. So we're going to go over some things that I've listened to a guy over the weekend, Myron Golden, and I've taken some notes which I want to share. Matter of fact, try to play one of his videos, the audio last week, but it wouldn't come up, so I've deleted some of my audio library to see if that will help, and I'm seeing if I can bring it up again. But in any event, homemade wealth. Now, let's, what is homemade wealth? Well, according to Myron Golden, homemade, and two good examples that he gave. Actually, I can give more than that, but let's start off with Rachel Ray. Rachel Ray, essentially, I mean, the first time I became aware of her, and this was before she was on Oprah or anything like that, she was doing a show on PBS called 20 Minute Meals. And we've all probably done 20 Minute Meals, okay? But she put together a cooking show, which is a gazillion cooking shows, but, it, you know, 20-minute meals. And so that would be an example of, according to Myron Golden, of a of homemade, because she became a millionaire by basically sharing with people. He said basically she was cooking food, she was cooking 20-minute meals, and she turned on the camera. Now, she wasn't part of the YouTube generation. I'm sure she's on there now. But, like I said, when I became aware of her, which was way before she got on Oprah, was she was on PBS, and she did a cooking show called 20-Minute Meals. And she could have started off simpler than that just by doing a cable access. So, I, you know, I'm not sure about that part of it because I caught her on PBS. But, you know, she didn't do anything unusual. She wasn't the best cook around, but according to Myron Golden, you know, and the whole idea of homemade wealth is take something that you just do around the house or a hobby or whatever, and now with the, you know, with YouTube and you know, these other platforms that we have, Facebook Live and all that, turn on the camera and share what you know. You might end up wealthy. So Rachel Ray is one example of that. Like I said, she does her thing in 20 minutes. Another example that he gave was Martha Stewart. And it's still not coming up. I don't know why. Let's see. I've got it in the library, but it will not come up, so I can't play it. So, in any event, Martha Stewart, you know, she does her, you know, how to decorate, how to set a table. Nothing original, but she broadcasts it out there. So, and now she's a billionaire. Okay, she didn't do anything original. So these are just two examples. Of course, if you go on YouTube, and there's quite a few videos on people in their garages, on the spare bedrooms. One YouTuber that I watch quite often, she's a seamstress for children's clothing, Angela Jasmina. Her and her family, and they start off in the bedroom, sewing clothes for kids. Then she went to a flea market. Then they moved back into a house. They've scaled up two, maybe almost three houses, definitely two, since I've been following for the last two and a half years. They have $1 million a year business out of their basement. So homemade wealth, and she sells clothes, and you can, you know, she takes orders doing live streams and that type of thing. So Myron Golden, that's what he defines as homemade wealth. Now, that's something accessible to everybody. So once again, to really grasp this, you got to wrap your head around it, is, and like I say, we're still in January. If you got your mindset, if you got your mind right, you can take ordinary things that you do every day, like Rachel Ray or a gazillion people on YouTube. And here's some of the concepts that Myron Golden puts out there that I really grasp. Because I listen to this guy about 3 hours a day now for the last week or so. Just 2-3 hours a day I'm listening to this guy. So first thing is, number one, there's abundance. There's no place that lacks abundance. That might be hard for some people to grasp, but according to, and I agree with him. Any place that you go, including the, there's abundance all throughout the planet, including wherever you're listening to this podcast right now. The problem is poverty, or where you don't, where you haven't mentally grasped where the abundance is wherever you are right now on the planet, is awareness. If you're not aware on how to tap into the abundance of where you're at right now, and, well, put it this way, if you lack awareness and you lack being a resourceful person, then you'll be lacking. Once again, if you lack awareness and you lack the quality of being resourceful or creative, then that's what lack shows up in your life. Now, one illustration that he gives is in the Garden of Eden. Because in the Garden of Eden, I mean, it was abundant. Matter of fact, if you, and let's do this little exercise right now. Type into any search engine how many species of trees exist. And I'm going to put this in on my phone right now. Let's see. Number of species. Oops, spelled species wrong. Species. Of trees, okay. All right, and what do we get? How many species of trees exist? Okay. Here in 2024, there's 73,000 species of trees. So if we go to the Adam and Eve allegory, Adam and Eve were told that they can eat the fruit of any tree except for one. And that's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So you got 73,000 species of trees. So you know you had to, you know, the number of trees, we don't know. But 73,000 species of trees, and you can have fruit of any one of these trees except for one, the tree of knowledge of good and evil. Well, where Adam and Eve got into problems and eventually got kicked out of paradise is, instead of enjoying and concentrating on the 73,000 trees, species of trees now, because you know there were more trees than that. That's just what a species. It'd be probably billions of trees around, okay, or if not trillions. They concentrated on the one tree that they were lacking. And you can't concentrate on abundance and lack at the same time. It's not going to happen. When you concentrate on abundance, you totally ignore lack. And when you concentrate on lack, you ignore abundance. Well, they're concentrating on that one tree They concentrated on the lack on what they didn't have. See, they had the 73,000. But they concentrated on the one that they lacked. And then they ended up in lack because once they ate of the fruit of the tree that they were lacking, then their eyes opened up and they discovered, well, they were lacking clothes and lack, doubt, and all that. So, like I said, I got this from Myron Golden. Check him out. Homemade Wealth. Check out that video. Over this past weekend, I probably put in at least 15, 20 hours of just listening to that. But, so we have nothing but abundance. But concentrate on your abundance, because if you don't concentrate on your abundance, and all you see, you know, once again, that then it's going, that doubt or whatever's going to creep in. So, but if you concentrate on abundance, you ignore lack. But if you concentrate on lack, then you'll blind yourself to the abundance that is at hand. They were surrounded by abundance. Their mind was focused in on lack. And according to Golden, that was the first temptation. The focus on lack. Let's see. Okay, so remember, poverty is caused by lack of awareness and lack of resourcefulness. Now, if you're not really a resourceful or creative person, then, you know, get a friend or a relative or somebody who will look on a YouTube video on how you can become more resourceful and creative, or just ask somebody who is more resourceful and creative than you if they can come up with, you know, any particular solution or strategy that you want to, you know, employ or whatever. All right, let's see what else is there. All right, that's all I got for you for today. All right, homemade wealth. So within, matter of fact, even another Bible story, 2 Kings 4:1-7. Let me go to that one. You know what? Before I go to that one, 2 Kings 4:1-7, I'm going to play a Steve Harvey piece from last week, because we want to take 2 Kings 4:1-7, take these principles that we're talking about right now, awareness versus lack, or abundance versus lack. And, you know, how you need to be, if you're lacking anything, you need to become more aware of what's available, what you do have, and how to be resourceful with that. So I'm going to play Steve Harvey, and we're going to come back, and then we want to apply what we're talking about here, awareness, resourcefulness, what Steve Harvey did, as well as what was done in 2 Kings 4:1-7.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So like, you could just see
$600,000 deducted.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, wow. Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was my lawyer called me and said, hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here. Oh, man. He said, this woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking, and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, Dawson, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government, plus I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing, and I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. Mm. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back.
Okay, reaching up a little motivational music by Santana. In any event, homemade wealth awareness, like I say, it's January, the start of a new year. Oh, the month is almost over with, so let's cram some more enlightenment into this just so we can keep track of our goals for this year. Now, I played Steve Harvey, so let's take a look at how did he get through, how did he pay off, how did a $22 million debt, he had a payment plan where he had to pay $650 a month, $650,000 a month. How did he do it? How could you do it? All right. Well, let's look at some principles here. Number one principle, and I'm going from Myron Golden, and I agree with him. There's abundance no matter where we are. We are surrounded by abundance, even if you're in the Mojave Desert, because there are groups of people who do live in desert environments around the globe. Now, if there's lack, it's because you're not aware of how to recognize the abundance that you're standing in the middle of. So you need to become aware of where you're at. Number two, if you're lacking anything, you're lacking resourcefulness. Some people are more resourceful than others, depending on the situation. But so if you can become more aware of something and become more resourceful, or at least partner up with a person that is more resourceful, creative, and aware of you doing whatever you guys are doing. All right? That's the type of poverty that you want to team up with. Because poverty is basically caused by lack of awareness and lack of resourcefulness. The abundance that you, it's there. You might not recognize it. You might not be aware of how to tap in on it, but it's there. You just need to be more resourceful and aware. Now, let's go to Steve Harvey. Now, there are two resources that you can tap into. I'm going with the Bible on this one. 2 Kings 4:1-7. But before I go to that one, because like I say, to achieve your goals, really, if your mindset is right, you can achieve anything. All right. Now, before we go to 2 Kings 1-7, go to, and I got to go to it on my phone. Wait a minute. Let me merge. Let me see. Let me do that right now. Give him a call back and merge him into this. All right. So, in any event, so before we go to 2 Kings 4:1-7, let's go to the, because we're going to take, once again, copy off what Steve did and some other people, because we can repeat the same thing. So if we go to the first chapter of Genesis in the Bible or the Torah, first chapter of Genesis, and list of Genesis, let's see, right, here we go. All right, and okay. First sentence, let's deal with the first sentence in the out of the Torah or Old Testament, the Bible. First sentence. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and the earth. And then, well, some people have a comma or a period. So if we look at that, now that's the first statement up in there. In the beginning, when God created the heavens and earth. Number one, we see what I would call God's job description. He's a creator. Steve Harvey created the Steve Harvey Morning Show, which is a radio program. He also created his stand-up act. So according to the Bible, if we're in this image and likeness, and I'm not trying to go to school, make this Bible study or nothing like that. I'm just throwing out this as an example. But we're all creators. We're all creators. Some people are carpenters, some people are electricians, some people design houses, cars, bake cakes, create television shows. We're all creators. We're all creators. So what Steve Harvey, like I said, he created the Steve Harvey Morning Show, and he created, he had a stand-up act. Second, and that's the first clue. So, we're basing this into homemade wealth awareness, because you got to get your mind right. All right. So, Steve was aware of what he could do to tackle that $650,000 a month debt, but the Internal Revenue Service employees, who had never been forced to think, "How can I make this?" See, they weren't aware. That's why they said that, you know, that's why they said what they said about him. No, what do we, you know, what's going to happen after he goes to see? Because they didn't, they weren't aware. He was aware, but they weren't aware. All right. Next thing is, so number one, if you've got, now this, which, if you weren't aware that you are a creator, as everybody who's listening to me on this live stream, you're creating, I don't know what you're creating, but you're a creator. Number one. All right. And then you need to that's a major part of awareness. Because that's your identity. That's the common denominator identity with everybody on this planet. We're all creators. All right. Next step is going to the creation story. God worked 6 consecutive days. You heard what Steve Harvey did. Okay. So work. Work is a mighty channel of prosperity. God didn't borrow any money. Steve Harvey didn't borrow any money. Steve didn't go to the bank. He didn't go to one of his millionaire friends to borrow it. He went to work. That's the print. That, consider that part of your awareness. All right? And Steve organized a team, because Steve didn't do that all by himself. He has a producer. It takes about 6 people to do the Steve Harvey Show, to put that radio show on every day. And then he's got 100-plus radio stations. So, you know, we're talking about a lot of resourceful people. So he wasn't tasked with trying to think of everything. He just had to concentrate on, you know, 1 or 2 things, and then he formed a team. And once again, whatever you lack in resourcefulness, whatever you lack in awareness, that's where teammates come in at. You don't have to have everybody with the same strength and same weaknesses. No, no. Where you're strong, wherever you're weak, partner up with somebody who's strong where you're weak. Those are the best partnerships. All right, now, let's go to 2 Kings 4, 1 through 7. The widow lady, husband died, creditors knock on the door, look, his husband left his debt behind. Do you have it? She would say, no. Okay. Well, then, look, here's the deal. We'll give you a little time, but then after time's up, we're going to come back and get your 2 sons, and they'll work for us as slaves until the debt is paid off. She said, hold it, give me a little time. Let me work out something. Now, this woman, she did not have the resources, the financial resources, to pay off her husband's debt. 2, she didn't know how she was going to come up with the money. But here's where she was smart. She said she went to the prophet who she considered to be more resourceful than her in solving this problem and more aware of how she can solve it. So she went to him and explained her problem, and then he asked her, now this is an awareness question, in my opinion. What do you have at home? What do you have at home? She said, well, at the time, you know what, people, I got to take a short little break. I'm pet sitting a pig, which probably weighs more than I do, but it's housebroken. So let me go feed this pig real quick, and then I'll be right back.
By the time you met Blondon, how big were you getting? Like, how much were you buying on a regular basis?
Oh, no, maybe a couple pounds, 16 pounds maybe.
16 pounds.
Yeah, 8 pounds, something like that. At that time, pounds were going for 35,000 a pound, yeah.
By the time you met Blondon, how much cash did you have?
I don't know. I had a few hundred thousand. For
few hundred
sure.
thousand. So you weren't a millionaire back then, but you were well off.
I was doing good.
You
yeah.
was doing good.
I was doing okay. pretty good.
So how did the whole Blandon thing come together?
Well, see, we were still getting from the Blandon, but we wasn't going directly to Blandon.
It was a middleman.
It was a middleman. So the only thing happened when we met him personally was that the middleman had got cut out, which dropped the price even more. But we were already getting it from Blandon, technically.
Technically.
Yeah.
You just weren't talking to him.
I just wasn't talking to him.
Okay. So how did you end up meeting him?
I bought him.
You bought him?
Mm-hmm.
So you basically bought your connect.
Yeah.
So you told your middleman, I'm going to give you...
$60,000.
$60,000, and you introduced me to your connect. And you can walk away with that $60,000.
Yep. And then Blandon paid $60,000 as well.
To meet you?
Yeah, to meet me.
So the connect got $120,000 mm-hmm. to essentially walk away from that part of the business?
Yeah.
Okay.
See, he got spooked, I heard. You know, somebody had got busted.
He was trying to get out of the game.
He was trying to get out of the game, so he felt, you know, he'd take $160,000, go back to Honduras, and live like a king.
$120,000. And that's what he did? He left?
I guess, yeah, for a while.
Okay. So now you're working with the Connect. Blandon.
Yep.
How is that relationship different than your previous relationship?
We got a lot tighter, you know. Me and Blandon hung out a little bit together. You know, I would go over his house. The other guys were more meet on the street, switch cash for money, you know, money for drugs, and it's over. But me and Blandon, we kind of hung out. We talked about business. So we developed kind of what I thought was a friendship as well.
Okay. Now, Blandon is the one that actually took you to the next level.
Technically, yeah, and no, you know.
Explain.
I mean, we took each other to the next level.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
You know, I wasn't, I wasn't out here helpless and homeless. You know, when I met him, I had a few hundred thousand dollars, and I had clientele. I knew the streets. You know, I knew all the shot callers from every hood in L.A. You know. So he helped, but, you know, not by himself.
According to some articles that I looked up, and you can tell me whether this is accurate or not, it said that you were making up to $3 million a day.
I've had days that I made $3 million.
You had a $3 million day?
Yeah.
Okay.
A few of them.
A few of them. Explain how you have a $3 million day.
Well, your big customers come through. Couple of them, and they drop off $200,000, $300,000. There were three or four spots that I had in L.A. where guys just stood out on the street that would make $100,000 a day, each one.
Each one?
Yeah.
Now, this actually built up. I guess you had operations in 42 cities?
I don't know how many cities. I mean...
A lot of cities.
We had a lot of cities.
All throughout the country.
Yeah.
So explain to me, and okay.
You know, different people do their estimates and their calculations and all
right.
that stuff. So,
and I guess the other thing is that you moved $900 million worth of cocaine.
Or more.
Which in today's dollars is the equivalent of $2.5 billion.
Yeah.
So you were moving.
You figure like this here. If you do 100 kilos. In one day, that cocaine goes a lot of places. You know, a lot of people, they taking it, they putting it on airplanes, they moving it around. Now you're talking about you move 200 kilos in one day, or 250, you're talking about a lot of cocaine.
Okay. If you were to stack up 250 kilos right now, how big would it be? Would it cover this entire room?
No. 250 kilos is not that big. Maybe the size of that couch.
That's it?
Yeah.
And that's the equivalent of $3 million?
According to what price you're getting.
Yeah.
What time it is. You know, one time I paid as much as $48,000 for a kilo. So $3 million won't go for when you're buying them like that.
Right.
But if you're getting them for 10 a kilo, you can buy 300.
Okay.
So all that factors in, you know. And I, like I said, I paid as much as, I paid 3,300 for an ounce of cocaine.
Okay, we're gonna get Rick Ross on here one day. He can tell you his story. Anyway, Gary, let me get back to this. So, we're talking about awareness. This lady, the widow lady, was she was in debt because now the dog's barking. Anyway, he's gonna have to wait. Okay, so, she said the only thing that she had as financial resource was a little pot of oil at the house. All right, so she went back to the house. Well, now as she went back to the house, and she became more aware of her resources. Remember, you can't concentrate on abundance and lack at the same time. When you focus on abundance, you'll start to see more abundance. When you focus on lack, you just don't see anything or not enough. So she realized, in addition to the pot of oil that she had, she also had human capital. She had two sons. That's human capital. She also had a house, all right? She also had storage area within the house. She also had neighbors, and she was also part of community. So she was instructed to go around to the neighbors. Okay, that's a resource. All right. And then ask to borrow. Man, what's with this dog? I don't let him out. I'll tend to him in a moment. Anyway, so she let him out. I've got the dog. Anyway, she told her sons to go out, and they formed a family business. Her and her two sons formed that for family business. Once again, they were being resourceful. So they went out empty-handed and went knocking on neighbors' doors and say, social capital. All right. So that's being resourceful. So can I borrow any vessels that you have? So they went out and they brought them back to the house. And then as they brought them back to the house, she was pouring what oil that she had in the little oil thing into the pots, the empty pots, until it got to the last one, and they were all filled up. She had everything stored up within the house, okay? So then she said, well, man, okay, what do I need to do next? Now, she didn't know what she was going to do next, so she went back to the prophet, okay, who had more awareness and was a little bit more resourceful when it came to this. And she said, well, what do I do now? And he said, and that's another thing, people, if you don't know something, ask, because that increases your awareness and your resourcefulness if you ask somebody that knows and what you don't know. If we sit down and we can just multiply how much abundance she saw as she got in motion and asked questions. Anyway, so the prophet told her, okay, today we'll call him a guru, financial guru. He said, go sell the oil, pay off the debt, and live off the rest. And that's what she did. Steve Harvey essentially did the same thing in contemporary times because, you know, he sold tickets. He was on the radio quite often, some TV. All the radio stations has a sales staff. Imagine 100 radio stations and you got a sales staff of let's say just two people. That's 200 people per station, you know, 200 people helping you sell tickets. To say nothing of people going online with e-commerce and all this, that, and other. So if you're facing a situation where you think you don't, and you know what, with Steve Harvey and the lady in, Second Kings 4:1-7, and even God, God took nothing and turned it into something. Steve Harvey and the widow lady took what they had on hand, what they had access to, and turned that into what they needed. So I'm saying all this to say, and go on YouTube and listen to Myron Golden and listen to his audio, his video on homemade wealth. He breaks it down better. I'm just, you know, I got to get my version of it down pat. But get your mind right first. Get your mindset right first. And remember, the problem isn't abundance. It's all around you. Even if you're in the Mojave Desert right now, you're surrounded by abundance. The disconnect is you need to become aware of how to tap into the available resources that you have on hand, and you need to become more resourceful. Now, once again, if you are not, do not consider yourself a resourceful person, do like the widow lady did, and do what like Steve Harvey did. Ask for help. Ask for help. Go to somebody who's more creative than you. Go to somebody who can see something that you can't see. I mean, hey, peanut butter and jelly. Who would have thought? Come on, who came up with that? Who came up with the idea of the sandwich? What, a bread? Because at one time, bread and meat was separate. Who thought of the idea of the sandwich? Oh, wait a minute, bread, meat, in between with two slices of bread? So that's all I got for you today. Homemade wealth, you're surrounded by it. And remember, we're all creators. The widow lady and her family, they created a family business. Steve Harvey created a radio show, the Steve Harvey radio morning program, morning show, and, of course, he has a weekend act. He created that. We're all creators. That's our common denominator identity. We're all creators. Delmar, anything you want to add before we log off for today?
Not today, Jackie.
Okay, on that note, everyone have a good rest of the day. And if you get a chance, check out Myron Golden, his video on YouTube, Homemade Wealth.
At Jiffy Lube, we car about cars. In fact, we're kind of obsessed. That's why we've been taking care of business with quick quality oil changes and service for over 40 years. And with things like our Carful Vehicle Review, where our experts check, fill, clean, and inspect your vehicle, you'll know we'll car for your car like we car for our own. Jiffy Lube. Car more.
Visit JiffyLubeDC.com to find a Jiffy Lube service center near you.